The date is March 20th, 2018. There's a large stage and an even larger screen behind it. The lights go down and a trailer begins to play.
It's called The Saddest Sunday in America. The first of 6 months with no football. For millions of fans, it means they'll stop watching sports altogether. For thousands of players who missed their shot, the dream of playing slips farther away. Football is like America. Both are built on opportunity, hard work, and innovation. As a sport and a nation, we root for the believers, the long shots, the early risers, and the never quitters, the ones who invent the future. We never know where greatness will come from, but we know it always starts with the same question. What if? What if football didn't have to end in February? What if players who missed the big show by a fraction of a second or a tenth of an inch finally got a second chance to change football forever? What if we brought football into the 21st century? What if we didn't have to say, what if? In February of 2019, some of the most respected minds in the history of the game will come together to form the Alliance of American Football.
And it concludes with Charlie Ebersole walking out on stage.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. For the last year, in secret, we've been building a new football league. We've brought together some of the top football experts and some of the greatest players who have ever played the game with a commitment to put high-quality, top-flight football on the field. America loves football. Now, in 2018, we know that engagement isn't just viewership on television. We have to look at other metrics. So let's look at fantasy. There are 59 million people in the United States who play some form of fantasy. 20 million of them exclusively play football. So what do these mean together? It means that there are millions of Americans that from February, when football goes off the air, until August, when football comes back, millions of Americans stop watching all other sports. Millions of Americans stop playing fantasy. So it raises the question of, are there players? Well, there's 73,000 players that play in college in the United States. But there are only 1,700 jobs in professional football in the United States. That's less than 2% of available jobs for something that these guys love to do that they can't do in the U.S. So why is there only one league?
The aura is skeptical, and understandably so. No fewer than five leagues have attempted what Charlie Ebersole is presenting today.
I don't know that I was all in. But I was pretty interested and just wondering how this was going to be from the XFL or the World Football League or United States Football League. How was this going to work? This seems a little bit different. You've got Bill Polian. You've got Dick Ebersole's son, Charlie. Maybe this thing's going to work because Bill Polian has built great football teams, competitive football teams. Maybe we're doing this the right way.
As the calendar year shifted into 2019, the anticipation for the Alliance of American Football started to grow. Whether it was a combination of morbid curiosity, or simply the notion with which the league was founded on, that football could continue past the Super Bowl and not run dormant until the fall, people were beginning to talk about the next chapter in spring football. Dean Jackson, a writer, journalist, and broadcaster, in Indiana, not only was one of those curious about the product, but also someone who, as a broadcaster, wanted to contribute to it. So he, like many others, created an AAF podcast that he named after further review that would follow the inaugural season of the Alliance of American Football.
And it rolled around in November or December. I've experimented and I've been pretty successful as a podcaster over the years, doing minor league sports for a number of leagues. At one time, I think I had six going simultaneously where these leagues had actually contracted me to put together a weekly show for them. And I had taken 5 or 6, maybe even 10 years away from doing that, and I had just wanted to get back into the game. And it made perfect sense to me to do it with the AAF. Thanksgiving rolls around, and we're starting to see these coaches emerge, and we're starting to see these mini camps take shape, and you're starting to say, this thing is going to happen. You've got Spurrier in Orlando, who couldn't have picked a better spot. And you see Mike Singletary, and you see Rick Neuheisel, who was a pretty good college coach. Why would he get involved? And Mike Martz, why were these guys coming back? And you started to think, okay, they know the track record of spring football. They're no dummies. So you started to think, okay, you know what? Some pretty good names, some football guys. This dog is going to hunt.
But could it work? We'd seen this before with other leagues. Why would the AAF work became the question on everybody's mind who was curious.
We had football people, we had broadcast people, and we had reasonable expectations. This was a league that wasn't trying to outgun the NFL by signing their biggest stars. There were no Herschel Walkers. There were no Jim Kellys. There were no Reggie Whites. These were not guys that could pick up a helmet and step onto a field and make an impact immediately. But it understood the economies of scale, and it understood the economics. They went to cities that didn't have NFL teams in general. They understood what they needed to do different to be just enough to make it interesting.
But one huge difference between the previous iterations of spring football and today is the popularity of fantasy football and its impact on the game. Professional football's fandom has shifted dramatically over the years, and although fans still hold fast to their favorite team, more and more fans revolve around players than teams. A big question for the AAF was, what was it going to do about fantasy football? But the answer never really seemed straightforward.
Through the playoffs, all I kept seeing on social media was, how are we going to play fantasy? How are we going to play fantasy? And I'd been toying around with this idea of doing that anyways. And I got to be about, I think it was 2.5 weeks before the start of the season. So the week before the Super Bowl. And it just, one morning I remember, just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, they're not coming out with the platform. They would have launched it by now. I mean, people need to draft ahead of time. So maybe they'll still do daily fantasy, but they're definitely not doing season-long fantasy. And so I decided to kind of buy a case of Red Bull and stay up for basically 2 days straight and build this site.
There was a lot the AAF wasn't telling fans about fantasy. But what it was saying and promising was a completely different technical experience with its brand of football. The traditional paradigm of fantasy football and fantasy sports in general has been the user simulating the role of general manager for their respective team. Start this player, sit that one, pickups, trades, you are the GM. Where the AAF was going to zig the other way, or zag depending on your point of view, was by making the player more the coach. Their app promised an in-game experience where players could predict the next play, whether it was a run or a pass, to the left or to the right, if it was a short or long gain or even a touchdown. An interesting wrinkle, but not what fantasy football players were necessarily looking for. When the app was finally released a week before the season opener, fears began to be raised. Where could one play AAF fantasy football? Brian Winsloff is a web developer in Memphis, Tennessee, who had dabbled in fantasy football over the years as a player. He, like so many of us, was curious about the AAF, not just from a football perspective, but a fantasy one. As 2019 began, Brian began to wonder what AAF fantasy football was going to look like, and what platforms it could be played on. But as time went on, Brian, like a lot of fans, sensed that something was amiss. And where something was amiss, that also meant there was an opportunity.
I talked to some people after the fact, and there were a ton of people that had already set up spreadsheets, and they were prepared to play fantasy by hand if they had to.
We've seen that movie. A group of friends who loved baseball and statistics enough to sit down at a rotisserie chicken restaurant and put together the first modern incarnation of fantasy sports. It was the same feeling here. creating something from nothing with the same spirit of fandom years later. The only thing was, how could you do it in 2019 with so many unknowns, including, most prominently, an unknown, unproven, not yet even played league?
One thing that really helped out, one thing the AAF really did right was providing that data API. I mean, without that, I wouldn't have been able to do it. That did a whole lot of the heavy lifting for me.
Okay, pause. You're probably asking yourself now, what is API?
Basically, they were providing their league data, the player data, in a structured format so that other programmers could kind of take it and do what they want with it. Which was really, really intriguing to me because I'm a web developer by trade, so you know I had some skills to do something with that data. And like I said, I was really into fantasy sports, and I started toying around with the idea of creating, you know, something with fantasy football in the AAF.
Now, this all seems through a small lens quite silly. It's just fantasy football. But to a certain population, fantasy sports are an addiction, whether it's an established league or not.
And from there, you know, I was kind of toying around with the idea of doing season-long fantasy football with that data API. But I didn't want to invest too much time because I figured, you know, surely they'll come out with something official and all of my time would just be wasted because who's going to use this third-party platform when we have an official platform?
But the reality was, there wasn't any other platform, official or not. ESPN, Yahoo, even the official AAF app, nothing fantasy football related.
So basically what I was doing is ingesting their data and then just kind of putting a front end on it. And then obviously adding some more stuff for the fantasy aspects. But my strategy kind of was, you know, like I said, I mean, people need time to draft. And when I started doing it, I still had a couple weeks before the season started. So my strategy was to get a site up where people could register, where they could form their leagues, and where they could draft. And when I first launched, that's the only functionality the site had. But I figured, you know, then I've got 2 weeks to build out the rest of the functionality, and people can get started putting their leagues together and drafting. So I kind of started from there in that 2 days, and that's the functionality I got done. And then from there, it was a mad scramble for the next 2 weeks to build all this other functionality around it, you know, setting your lineups, waiver wires, doing trades in your league, all of that other stuff that goes along with fantasy football.
What Brian was providing was the means for how to play. He created a site called altfantasysports.com. It was a very down and dirty, simple, efficient, graphicless site that was built simply around the essential components of fantasy football. But there was another major key component to fantasy football that was needed to make the fledgling operation work. Analysis. And that is where another developer by the name of Matt Swanson comes into our story.
A few years ago, 2 years ago, I started playing fantasy Canadian football, which was an interesting experience. I thought it was interesting to take all of the analysis and tools that they had for NFL, and I started kind of building my own versions of some of them. So projection systems and lineup optimizers and all that for the Canadian Football League. What kind of got me started down the path of following these sort of niche second tier football leagues was I really liked NFL football. I was looking for something during the off season for that and something where I could maybe leverage some of my software background to make a little bit of extra money.
Like Brian, Matt wouldn't have to look far for an opportunity to seize upon.
Early January, it was sort of getting into playoff mode and the season's basically over. Canadian football hasn't started, and those are really the only two fantasy sports that I follow. But yeah, I had saw some information about the AAF, and I decided, I was kind of bored one evening, and I was just poking around to see. I noticed that they had posted some information about the API and the data plans for the league on the engineering blog, and I saw that one of the posters had started posting on some of the AAF Reddits, and I got a little more into it and said, okay, well, at least there's a way to get some of this data out of here. I started, as soon as I knew that there was some games that have been played and there's some stats, I started hooking up to the data feed and pulling some of that out. So just a few weeks before everything was going live, I started the fabled, you know, first lines of code for the No Extra Points site.
So what we had was two dedicated, passionate developers with the drive, skill, and intuition to provide the housing and analysis to quickly cultivate and send forth an actual platform for AAF fantasy football. Week one for the AAF would be a critical junction point for the league. It needed a hot start. With a Saturday evening time slot on CBS, the league would have to deliver. Fans would see right through bad football. The XFL faced the same issue in 2001, when its first game between the Las Vegas Outlaws and the New York New Jersey Hitmen slogged painfully to a 19-0 finish, which got the league off to a poor start in the eyes of prospective fans looking for high-quality football. The AAF needed a product that would quickly get fans talking.
The AAF had to come out of the chute with two big games, or they had to have quality games and quality play, even if the scores didn't match up. San Antonio and San Diego couldn't have asked for anything better. Perhaps the defining moment of the league happened when the San Diego quarterback just got his clock cleaned, his helmet blasted into the third row of stands from middle of the field, and everybody in the universe is saying, is he alive?
They saw the man coming, and he is lit up. My goodness.
Wow, he was completely blindsided. He had no idea.
And in Atlanta, Orlando, probably the biggest cities in the league, perhaps in terms of media markets, the two biggest in the league. Spurrier reaches into his bag of tricks.
To Akeem Hunt, a reverse. Marshall throwing it back, and it's caught for the touchdown! The Orlando special!
The Philly special, but it's the winter. What do Philadelphia people do in the winter?
Two crazy plays you have not seen in the NFL at the same week, and forever or ever. And we have everybody stops and goes, oh my goodness, this league is going to make some noise. This was a league that was rewriting the rules and doing things their own way. Not in a brash way, but in a, you know what, let's make it happen. Let's experiment. Let's see what we can do. We had players who we knew of. We had players that were in the NFL for cups of coffee, like Garrett Gilbert, who were taking advantage of their opportunities and looked to be getting noticed by the NFL. This is better football than we thought it was going to be.
As the Burko hit and the Orlando special had their life in the viral sphere of social media, AllFantasySports.com was blazing with activity. In fact, maybe more than Brian Wentzloff expected. Dating back to the launch of AllFantasySports.com, Brian was confronted with the notion of a much higher user count than he had anticipated, which invariably led to issues on the site.
The week after I launched the site, there was a pretty stressful Thursday night, the Thursday before the Super Bowl, where we, at this point, that day there had been about 8,000 active users on the site, and the site crashed really bad for the first time. And so still, you know, at that point, I thought that was a ton of users to have on the site, and I couldn't believe how many I had. So then that Saturday, you know, on the Thursday, there had been about 8,000 active users. By that Saturday, there were over 20,000 active users, and I got over 500,000 page views that day. So, of course, that took it to the absolute next level, and the site started crashing again. And anybody who was on the site that Saturday definitely remembers it. It was taking people, you know, 8 hours to run their drafts and things like that. From there, what I had to do is that following week, I actually, in the middle of the night one day, so a lot of people didn't even realize that happened, but I had to take the site down temporarily and move everything to some kind of more expensive servers. The main thing was I upgraded the database to, you know, an actual dedicated database. Before, I was just using some shared database I had on a shared host. For, you know, the technical people out there, they'll know what that means. And actually, you know, so just basically just upgraded all the back end of everything. and then relaunched the site. It took about 2 hours to do, and then everything seemed to run pretty well for the rest of the season. There were definitely still enhancements to be made, but there were no more 30-second page loads or anything like that.
For Matt Swanson and his AAF analytics site, the great unknown surrounded the quality of play. Would scoring be closer to the NFL, or would it be on the higher side like the Arena Football League? The answer would be 100% the former, which was important in trying to figure out which analytics would be critical for fantasy players to set their lineups.
So with that in mind, I kind of just tried to take things that we knew worked from NFL and bring them over. So we know that, you know, targets are important. So targets are something we want to be looking at. And as the season went on, we tried introducing more advanced stats, and I think we were successful at being able to predict some of the opportunities that players were getting. So things like air yards, which is sort of how far the ball travels to get to the player minus how far they run with it, and it includes incomplete passes. So that's a pretty advanced statistic. Maybe not so much for NFL anymore. There's been a few different sites and analysts that have really done all the work in finding out how predictive that is, so we can just leverage their work and apply it to a different league and see at least, you know, 80% of the efficacy with 20% of the effort.
And as the AAF was about as hot as it could be out of the gates, so were both Brian's AllFantasySports.com and Matt Swanson's NoExtraPoints.com. The surge of activity caused Brian to upgrade servers, which was no small feat considering this was still a hobby, an on-the-side type of venture.
I have a day job throughout all of this. It was kind of crazy. I don't know, I was, the thing that really kept me motivated is I got so many incredible messages. Like, there was an incredible community that sprung up around this thing, and I just was full of energy to make this thing done. I don't know, it was unlike any other project I've worked on in my life. I just knew that there was this huge market of nice people that wanted this. So, I mean, I was doing things like, you know, that first weekend of the AAF, you know, I'm a huge Memphis Express fan, had season tickets, but we played away in Birmingham for the first week. So I actually drove to Birmingham, watched the game, drove home, got home about midnight, and there had been some major problems on the site. So I went to bed, woke up about 4 in the morning, and got in a solid 4 hours of work to fix all the problems on the fantasy side before I had to go to my day job that day. So there was just a whole lot of situations like that. But I, like I said, I don't know. I mean, the community around this thing was amazing, and it was pretty easy for me to stay motivated and kind of work those long days like that.
Matt's site found similar success as well during the first weekend of the AAF, with a higher than predicted page view count.
Really, I kind of launched the site, you know, sort of the week before the game started, and I made the Twitter account, put up the website, and I just kind of said, all right, let's see what happens. Like after the first weekend, I went from like 0 to 750 followers on Twitter, and a lot of that was due to the big accounts, giving me a shout out and tagging me and saying, hey, if you're looking to get into this, you know, AAF thing, like, this is the site. A big thing about the first weekend was, you know, the league was very much in startup mode, and so they didn't have scores or box scores or any stats available after the first week. So it was really kind of a stark contrast, because they had worked all these great media deals, and the games were on, you know, CBS Sports and NFL Network the first weekend, and they were getting millions and millions of people. But if you went to the official website, like, there was nowhere to see even the score of the game, much less, you know, who was doing well or who the players were. So for that first weekend, No Extra Points was the only place where you could get these stats. One of the things I noted was that during the week, almost 80% of the traffic was from desktop computers, obviously people at work doing important work-related business related to the analysis of fantasy sports. And then on the weekend, it would flip over, and it'd be about 80% mobile traffic from people checking in on their phones while they're, you know, watching the game or out and about.
The league was off and running, and while the on-the-field product received mostly positive reviews and the notion of whether these games were watchable was somewhat put to rest, the first signs of trouble materialized quickly in the form of missed payroll checks after week one.
The news erupts. A reporter says that the league is in trouble. They were on their deathbed. They didn't have money and players weren't paid. The same time, a press release comes out saying that Tom Dundon has committed $250 million or whatever the number was to the league.
Why did you want to get involved with the AAF?
I didn't. I didn't know I did anyway. You know, after week one, football looked really good. The ratings were good. My kids were interested. I actually watched, didn't know I wanted to, and enjoyed it.
How old are your kids?
17 and 15, the boys. Okay. And, you know, fantasy football's a thing that's pretty important in their lives.
Right.
So anyway, I was at a breakfast on Wednesday morning with one of my partners. I'm involved in a business called Topgolf, and he said, you should call.
I've heard of that.
It's a good one.
Big fan.
So you should call Charlie Ebersol because he knows the way I like to do things is if there's a little less risk and a good opportunity at the same time, which is hard to find. And they had put up good ratings. The football looked good, and they were in a position where instead of having to continue to raise money, they could have used the stability that I was able to provide them. And so, you know, I think the plan is just to be a development league. The whole story of giving people a chance, I think the idea of creating something or being part of something where people get a chance, and whether it's coaches, players, refs, or maybe innovate technology, broadcasters, I think that's compelling. It's interesting. And so if we can just be a developmental league that mm-hmm. serves the NFL, I think that's interesting, and I think it's compelling, and so that's what I like about it.
Everybody that I talked about how players were concerned. We had discussions about it, and they got paid just a couple days later. Just thought it was kind of weird that a press release would come out about a new owner of the league or a new chairman of the league, and it just seemed really, really odd all the way around, and I think most of us moved on.
Because, of course, the most important part was the product on the field. Tom Dundon was a savior for the league, and his investment seemed to provide stability that seemed alarmingly needed after only 1 week into the inaugural season. But where the AAF needed to succeed was in building star players and star teams, and it was apparent after only a few games who the better teams and who the better players were in the AAF, which only created more content for Dean and his podcast after further review.
The storylines developed really, really quickly. You saw Trent Richardson, who was rumbling for touchdowns, a fan favorite in Alabama with Birmingham, who had a second chance, who had a great story, who was charismatic in a community that surrounded him. You get a Garrett Gilbert, the quarterback in Orlando, who was the son of an NFL quarterback, who played in a number of NFL camps, including was an understudy to Tom Brady in one of the years that the Patriots, and so many years that the Patriots have won Super Bowls, but Garrett Gilbert was part of that. And we started to see this, and fans, I didn't know what to expect with the podcast. Here I'm doing, I'm thinking, you know what, if we get a couple hundred listeners, we'll be great. First few weeks, literally anything that I posted, people were gobbling it up. It got to the point where I felt like I had to put something up every single day. If I could put up four things a day, I would put up four things a day. That's how insatiable people were for information about this league. And people were involved, and people were making suggestions. And, I mean, the numbers continued just to grow and grow and grow and grow. And it got to be the point where I was overwhelmed with just trying to keep up with providing everything that fans wanted.
The chasm between the best and worst teams was evident after week one and confirmed by week three. The Orlando Apollos were the class of the AAF with a fast-paced spread passing attack. Not far behind were Mike Martz's San Diego Fleet, Mike Riley's San Antonio Commanders, and Rick Neuheisel's Arizona Hotshots. The Birmingham Iron, led by touchdown machine and fantasy league winner Trent Richardson, were known just as much for having the toughest defense in the league. But teams like Salt Lake City, coached by Dennis Erickson, Atlanta, coached by Kevin Coyle, and Memphis, coached by Mike Singletary, struggled with stagnant to poor offenses and porous defenses that were on the field for most of the game. Fantasy players had to adjust. I'll speak from personal experience here. Drafting for AAF Fantasy felt like throwing darts with the lights off, and I'll admit, I drafted terribly. I missed out on Charles Johnson from Orlando, Rashad Ross from Arizona, and pretty much any running back getting the most touches on a team. It was hard to figure out who was going to be your best bet. So I can tell you that it was a relief to see some kind of hierarchy form between the better and lesser teams. And with that, the demand on both allfantasysports.com and noextrapoints.com grew as well.
So I tried to keep it about 50-50. I would honestly keep a tally of how many people were requesting certain features, and that's kind of how I prioritize them. But I also had a few things that I just wanted to do for myself. I mean, I was the first user of the site. I built the site because I wanted to use it. So I was able to balance that and kind of just do some things that I wanted to do as well. And I tried to keep that balance about 50-50.
At the beginning, in the preseason, they didn't have any stats. They just had the play-by-play. So I was having to sort of parse out of the play-by-play, and it would say, you know, well, T. Richardson runs for 12 yards. And I would have to write some code that would try to determine who the player was and if it was a rushing play or a passing play and how many yards it went. So eventually it improved a little bit, and they started adding and said, oh, it was, you know, Trent Richardson and he ran for 10 yards. So that was good. So that got me off of doing a lot of manual work and letting us use just the official data feed. But then for things like targets and air yards, and that stuff was more advanced. So it was the same process. So for like targets, the targets originally weren't in the API, but we could do something similar, and we'd say this player caught a pass, so obviously he had a target, or this pass was incomplete and it was toward this player based on the play-by-play data, so we can give them a target. The same thing for air yards. The really tough part about air yards is you need to know on incomplete passes where the player was when the pass was incomplete. So we weren't actually able to get that out of the play-by-play data, but I was in contact with some of the developers at the AAF, and I was really pressing on them, like, hey, we really want this added. It'd be really awesome if you have it. You probably have the data, so please help us out here. And I think it really kind of just speaks to the kind of grassroots effort. Like all this time, I was talking with their engineers. In this case, was like over Reddit. So this guy Chris, who worked on the team, was posting on the Reddit. So I would just send him like Reddit messages, like, hey, like this isn't working in the API, or you're missing this thing, or hey, can you add this? It felt a little bit funny that I had to like use Reddit to send this guy messages, and then, you know, he would go off the next day at work and add these things in, and then he would send me back a message, and I would test it out and get it added. But eventually, we got all the data that we needed added to the API for basically doing, for the most part, like at parity with the NFL as far as advanced statistics go.
Matt discovered something else very interesting in the view counts for his page. His site was not going to be just numbers and projections.
The whole, everything about the Alliance Fantasy community was really just tied together with, you know, shoestrings and bubblegum. When I originally made the site, I didn't really have any plans to be doing a lot of content. I was hoping that it was a sort of, because the data analysis side is sort of, you set it and forget it, right? So I would spend some time writing the code to do all the statistical analysis, and then in theory, I just have to run that. And that was kind of my plan, was like, hey, I don't want to be spending a bunch of time doing this. I'll just write the script to do it. But really, that changed kind of abruptly during the first weekend when I saw how many people were using the site, and I was like, oh, okay, like there's a lot of people going here, and there's not a lot of content. Like, then there's, you know, fantasy podcasts, or, you know, here are the top DFS plays. It all during that week, so I saw the interest to the site, and I was like, huh, I wonder if anyone is interested in writing articles for this. And I didn't really have a grand plan or anything. I just sort of shot off a tweet from the account during this kind of crazy first days when everyone is so excited, and I something like, hey, like I've got this site, I'm getting some traffic. If anyone is interested in writing some articles, like, let me know. I'd be happy to to hear any pitches and publish stuff. And right away, I got a bunch of DMs on Twitter, and then ultimately, there's maybe 20 people that sent me a message, and of that, about half of them actually never followed through on anything, and of that, about half of them actually were able to pitch some kind of concept for a series that they wanted to work on or an article they wanted to write, and went ahead and wrote it up. And then I did all of the sort of editing and proofreading and did some back and forth with folks. And then I took on the role of publisher.
The list of writers still credited on the contributors page on noextrapoints.com include Anders Eggleston, Jackson Connor, Matt Gajewski, J.R. Reynolds, Matthew Stevens, and a Reddit user named Kelset11. This group of hungry content creators became an added reason to come back to the site, not even weekly, but daily. And it's not to take away anything from Pro Football Focus or Fantasy Pros or even the Action Network, just to name a few, who were other sites creating AAF fantasy statistical content. The angle the No Extra Points crew took was unique in examining, for example, running back platoons and breaking down who in the stable of running backs on a team were the best bets, or the wide receiver cores and who was the best bet based on targets or air yards. The contributions everyone was making to the site helped build the credibility of the site more and more each week, and the results were not merely just relegated to higher numbers on the site. It was also gaining traction on social media with some very well-known fantasy analysts.
So it was definitely really cool to get the shout out from Matthew Berry and Evan Silva and Lewis and even folks like Scott Barrett and Scott Fish and even just some of the smaller fantasy people that I've been following these folks on Twitter for several years, and I read their articles, and so it was cool to be able to be a little bit of an insider into at least a small part of that community. It was just really surreal too, and it was kind of crazy going going into work after the first weekend, and some of my buddies at work were asking you said you were doing that new football thing, like how's it going? And it's like, oh yeah, this guy with 1 million Twitter followers, who's the head of ESPN, who's on TV every week. He tweeted at me, and I got like 1,000 extra Twitter followers. And
by week six, attendance was for the most part holding steady league wide. But if you looked at the photos in places like Salt Lake City, San Diego, or Atlanta, the situation appeared to be very different. There were a lot of empty seats, but that was expected in year one for the league. San Antonio was definitely the standout, as home games for the Commanders posted 28 and 29,000 for weeks 1 and 2 before cracking 30,000 in week 7. In terms of ratings, the AAF was doing decent, averaging between 425 and 525,000 viewers, and even earned additional games broadcast on TNT due to its rising popularity. Of course, there were grumblings from fans throughout the season, as the AAF was frequently spread out to the likes of the CBS Sports Network and the Bleacher Report live streaming app, which were either not widely available or accessible for users the way they would have liked it to be. Despite that, however, there was a fan base to the league, and it was holding its position pretty well despite being broadcast during the NBA season and March Madness. People were caring about the AAF. And yet, with all that being said, the Alliance of American Football seemed to lack the spectacle that came with the viral moments that came out of week one that caught the attention of the casual fan. So the timing could not have been more perfect for a particular name to be rumored to be headed to the AAF.
Expected it to in a little bit, but first we have some breaking news to get to. If you haven't heard yet, former Heisman Trophy winner, former NFL first round pick, Johnny Manziel, aka Johnny Football, has signed a standard contract with the Alliance, meaning we expect him to be playing in this football league. Yeah. He is now in the process of going through the waiver wire, which means that the team right now with the worst record, which is the Memphis Express, will have the first opportunity to sign him. So when that happens and how soon we might see him on a football field is still a big unknown. But you guys, oh my God, Johnny Manziel. Yes.
Johnny Manziel always seemed to have a circus that surrounded him. No matter where he goes, there's always a discussion Can he play? Does he have a sideshow? He comes to Memphis. Mike Singletary says he's impressed by his character. He's impressed by his willingness to work. It seems to be that there is a marriage that's going to work in Memphis. But certainly another spike in attention for the AAF with Johnny Manziel. And maybe this was becoming a league of choice of development for players.
The landing spot for the former first-round draft pick and Heisman Trophy winner was the 1-5 Memphis Express, who had struggled with Christian Hackenberg the first few weeks of the season, then lost Zach Mettenberger to injury in week 6. Manziel represented the shot in the arm the Express needed, but more importantly, the league needed. Of course, with Manziel's arrival meant the fantasy landscape would be affected too.
It was interesting. The rumors started flying as soon as there were rumors about him getting kicked out of the CFL, there were rumors about him potentially joining the AAF. And that's when I started getting requests to add him on the site. I mean, there were dozens of people a day asking when he's going to be up on the site. And my answer was the same for everyone. I mean, I'm pulling my data directly from the AAF. Like, at this point, I wasn't doing manual data entry. So I was just like, you know, whenever he's up on their site, my site will pick it up and I'll get it. Until then, there's nothing I can do. And I think it was right up until maybe a couple days before his first game that they had him in the data API. So if he finally showed up on my site.
You hear the crowd. They are excited.
Here we go, Zion. Wide 80. Wide 80.
First play is a handoff to Stacy. No, it's not. It's a keeper. How about Manziel sliding past the 40? It fooled everybody in the building, including me.
It's like making a birdie on the first hole.
That's what he can do. It's a 12-yard carry for Manziel.
Wide
they bring the extra rusher. Manziel stands tall, goes left side, has a receiver, caught left sideline. Big connection to Pink Howard. Johnny Manziel with his first completion of his Alliance career.
Manziel's first game was week 7 as Memphis hosted Birmingham, who shut out the Express 26-0 in week 1. The anticipation for Manziel to bring his Johnny football magic was palpable. And yet, what the AAF likely wanted the least was what happened. Brandon Silvers was the unlikely hero as Memphis' starting quarterback, leading the Express to a 31-25 upset victory.
Give a comparison about the hype and the payoff. I actually got more emails asking when Johnny Manziel was going to be up on the site than people that actually started him on their teams. And so that was kind of shocking to me. For all the hype around him, for all the emails I got asking, where's Johnny? At the end of the day, less than 10% of the leagues actually had Johnny Manziel starting in their league somewhere. That was such a shock, that whole Silvers to Horn connection that just kind of came out of that first game that Johnny played. Everyone was like, wow, that's the go-to now. Like, is Johnny ever going to play again?
The days leading into week 8 unexpectedly brought more red flags and uncertainty about the AAF's future.
Another blockbuster comes in. The league says it's moving its championship from Vegas to suburban Dallas. Leagues don't move their championship games. Travel plans are made. You've got sponsors. You've got other things happening that it just doesn't happen. In other leagues, it's an event that you've been planning for, certainly for years, if not several years leading into it. And the first response is how they spun it. It's the world headquarters for the Dallas Cowboys. And you start to think, okay, it's just an indoor facility. It's a field house. Immediately, people are thinking, why in the world would you play in a training facility? That started people really, really questioning the legitimacy of the league. One of the questions was, do they have enough tickets sold for Las Vegas? So many of the fans on the message boards were immediately writing off the league as being incompetent. And then it started to snowball with the attendance and other things. And they started to look at the app and they started to look at what was going on with attendance figures and the broadcast and how they didn't supposedly promote in individual cities. Now the league really was in a perceptional mire.
But that wasn't all.
So Dundon makes this statement, this provocative statement that says, we can't continue unless we become a developmental league of the NFL, which brings up the problem of getting the NFL Players Union to sign on. Very problematic for a number of reasons. Number one, the NFL Players Union is nowhere close to renegotiating another deal with the NFL. That's their number one priority. That's their only priority. Their priority is to make sure they get enough of the pie from the NFL. Their priority is to protect veteran players who, and let's be honest, who are going to carry the weight of the union. And what most people didn't realize, it's like pushing a snowball up a hill in the summer. Doesn't take a brain surgeon to realize that it's not in the best interest for the players' union to embrace this quickly. Dundon makes a strategic failure in that he calls out the players' union, essentially, calls out the viability of the league, trying to send up a lead balloon to get the NFL Players Union to the table, and they have been there and done that so many times before with the NFL. Dundon's comments just bounce off the wall and fall to the ground.
The specific quote that dominated the talk heading into Week 8 was Dundon saying, if the Players Union is not going to give us young players, we can't be a developmental league. We are looking at our options, one of which is discontinuing the league. With 3 weeks left in the regular season, the Orlando Apollos had already clinched a playoff spot with a dominant record of 6-1. In Week 8, the Apollos would visit the Express in a game hyped around Manziel and Apollos coach Steve Spurrier on the field opposite one another. Despite Brandon Silvers leading Memphis to victory the week before, the clamor was still very loud for Manziel to take the field, especially against the best team in the AAF. Early in the second quarter, Singletary made the move, not because Silvers was playing bad, but to try and give Orlando another look. Manziel made an impact immediately with both his arm and his legs. And then, just the way football can do it, everything came to an abrupt halt.
Wide 80! Wide 80!
Here's Manziel throwing up first down, picked off in the end zone! Tried to squeeze it in there, it's the veteran Will Hill! A 23-yard return from the 29-year-old free safety.
Officials timeout for an injured player.
And we have, is that Manziel?
I think it is.
We have Manziel down after taking a hit.
Despite Manziel's injury, the Express took the lead in the second half around another great performance from Silvers. But a combination of questionable referee calls and ill-timed penalties set up a game-winning score for Orlando that moved them to not only 7-1, but clinched home field advantage for the Eastern playoff game. Later that night, the Salt Lake Stallions would keep its playoff hopes alive with a sluggish 8-3 victory over the San Diego Fleet. The following day, the Birmingham Iron would clinch the other playoff spot in the East by defeating the Atlanta Legends. And finally, the Arizona Hotshots would upend the San Antonio Commanders to move into a tie for first place in the West. Why are these games significant? Because these would be the last games played in the first season for the Alliance of American Football.
So we wake up that Monday, and it's just like there is a malaise, there is just a bad feeling.
That Monday was actually the very first Monday without any major stat corrections that needed to be made. So everything was finally running really smoothly between the AAF's API and my site.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think there was much to it. I was getting ready for week 9 action. I was, you know, getting the playoff probabilities adjusted, and I thought that was going to be the big drama of the week, was like, is Garrett Gilbert going to be playing, you know, full snaps, or is Richardson gonna get rested for his health? And
I remember sitting in my office at work when I pulled up ESPN's Outside the Lines on my laptop using my phone's hotspot and learned the unfortunate truth.
Well, it appears the Alliance of American Football is shuttering, has been rumored for some time.
The principal owner, Tom Dundon, is not funding the operations any longer. The football staff, football operations, the teams are being told it will suspend operations, and it'll be a short time after that, I suppose, that the whole thing will shut down.
There would be no Week 9. There would be no playoffs. And there would be no AAF championship game. It was just done.
Boy, I'm not going to lie. I have a day job, and I don't think I got much done at my day job that day. I was just kind of on Reddit and Twitter the whole day. You know, things were developing by the hour, and then that whole officially suspending operations thing finally came out that it had been rumored for hours was going to come out. They finally made the announcement, and it was sad. It was really sad. I just got really, really depressed.
Everyone kind of was laughing to keep from crying, and then it's kind of the day wore on, and sort of the reality hit them, like, oh, this league is actually like folding, and there's, you know, thousands of employees and hundreds of players, and, you know, there's a lot of folks that, you know, moved across the country to take a job here, either as a player or, you know, what I think a lot of people don't realize is, like, each team had a full staff of people. There was hundreds of people working on the marketing, business development, ticket sales, technology, you know, social media, all that stuff that needed to get done for the league. Like, there's folks that, you know, uprooted their lives to go, you know, move to Arizona to go be the director of, you know, media communications for the Hotshots, and, you know, so it was sad for those folks. It was sad for the players.
How did this happen? There have been a lot of theories that range from simple business decisions to very webbed conspiracies that revolve around technology and other factors. As like all stories like this, the truth lies somewhere in between. Connor Orr's story in Sports Illustrated, entitled League on Fire, is probably the most comprehensive in telling the story of the demise of the AAF and clarifying a thoroughly confusing situation where it is difficult to place the blame squarely on one person. Regardless of who is to blame, the result was still the same. The Alliance of American Football, a league with the best of intentions, had abruptly ended before the conclusion of its inaugural season, which left a community of fans, fantasy or otherwise, to grieve over something they had grown quite attached to.
And at first it was a sense of shock, like all point of grief, maybe a sense of relief, maybe a thought of, okay, somebody somewhere is going to come in like they had before and rescue the league and keep it going. There had even been some talk in some circles that, oh, what they're doing was illegal. A lot of fans, well, not a lot, some fans were talking about, oh, it's just a matter of we can get enough support and we can have fundraisers and we can have telethons and we can raise $20 million to finish the season. And it had reached epic proportions of just denial.
You know, I'm in that startup world. I know how businesses go. Sometimes you just run out of money and you got to fold, but there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And that was just such a tragic, tragic way to go about it. And it was just kind of a whole day filled with, I don't know, just kind of sadness, depression, like one thing after the other. And then by the end of, you know, by 5 o'clock that day, I had to get offline. I did a short interview that day with the All Fantasy Sports podcast. And then I just kind of shut off the computer and went and tried to watch TV to keep my mind off it the rest of the night.
Maybe sometimes the best way to deal with something is just to be sudden, because you don't have to make any more choices. And it was so debilitating. It was like death. It was, you had become so closely involved with it. You got to know the players and the coaches, and you knew people in the league offices. For me, I had developed strong relationships with people in the front office who I still to this day would consider friends, people that I thought told me the truth as best as they could tell it. I don't think there was any deception coming from my people in the league office or with teams. And then for this to happen, It was just so stunning.
From time to time since the shutdown of operations, I would go on my phone and open up the AAF app. I never deleted it. I kind of don't want to either for nostalgic reasons. But I'd go in there and I'd look at the schedule for the championship game dated April 27th with TBD listed for both teams. I never could have conceived that April 27th, 2019 would come and go without a champion being declared and the inaugural season never completed. I also remember going to Target and Walmart and buying the remaining boxes of AAF Topps trading cards and organizing them in a binder by team and position. I loved watching the AAF. I still feel now, months removed from the final week, that it was the most fun I had had watching a season of football in a long time. Granted, some of it was agonizing, especially when my defense would inevitably give up a touchdown to Trent Richardson, or Davion Smith would score the touchdown over D'Ernest Johnson, or my tight end would wear the donut after scoring over 10 points the week before. But that's also the power, the agony, and the ecstasy of fantasy football. It would be easy to focus on how short-lived the AAF was, or how it laughably couldn't last longer than the first incarnation of the XFL. But it's more rewarding to search for the legacy of the league.
When we look back at the league, we have to look at what they did right. They beat the odds. Let's be honest. Spring football doesn't have a very long shelf life. In fact, spring football very rarely gets out of the test tube. So give credit to the AAF for making that happen. But I think you also have to look at some other things. It made us really think differently about how we do football. We had to look more closely with the technology behind it. We had to look more at becoming a fan-friendly league, which I would say the AAF really exposed a critical wrinkle in the NFL.
Man, so it was great. I had such a good time following the AAF and going to the AAF games. I drove down to Birmingham for that first Memphis-Birmingham game, and the crowd there was amazing. There weren't too many Memphis people there. They had us all kind of in the same section up in kind of one of the higher tiers. But I don't know. I've been to a ton of professional sports games in my life, and the mood in that stadium was just so electric. I think part of it was kind of the uncertainty, like what's going to happen? Nobody knows. For us, it turned out we were going to get shut out, so that wasn't such a good feeling. But you know, it was still great. The fans were so welcoming, and the game was still really fun. And then from there, every week just got noticeably better in every respect of the game. And going to the Memphis home games was incredibly fun. The crowds got bigger every time. The crowds got more into it every time. The crowds finally started learning the names of the players and things like that, and people actually knew what they were watching. And it was just a really great experience overall.
Yeah, it kind of came and went out of nowhere. over the past few weeks, I've definitely been enjoying some of the extra free time that I had. I mean, I was getting pretty into this, and so I was working my regular job, and then I was coming home and spending, you know, easily a few hours a day just either trying to get more stats or managing articles and editing content. And I was working on even some really cool stuff with the telemetry data, which is the sensors that they have on each player. I was trying to get basically the equivalent of the NFL Next Gen stats, where they can, you know, plot routes and you know, show how fast players are traveling. And I was up to my neck and working on that. And we had some other things planned for later in the season that just kind of never materialized. So ultimately, like, it was bittersweet in the sense that what I was trying to do with the site was kind of build up an asset and a brand for the Alliance of American Football. And
the purpose of the AAF was to be a league of second chances. An incomplete season cut the journey short. But as of May 12th, over 60 players from the AAF had been signed by NFL teams, with a few more even finding homes in the CFL and other football leagues. It was a league that promoted diversity, with women in coaching roles, officiating roles, and team leadership roles. It was a league that took serious strides to protect players and promote a safer version of football. It was also a league, although doomed, that provided opportunities for a variety of content creators who had desire, passion, and ambition to be a part of something new and different.
I can't talk enough about the friendships that I built in the league. I can't talk enough about the accessibility to players and to coaches. There were teams that were less accommodating than others, but in general, we were always able to get shows with top quality guests. We were able to get good content. And oftentimes it was just a matter of calling somebody, and it wouldn't be long before somebody from the front office, someone in a high-ranking role, would call me back and say, we'll make this happen for you, and they did. The other thing, too, was I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how people would respond. And the minute I posted the show, it just exploded. People couldn't get enough information. And I'll be candid with you. There is a part of me that feels crushed because we were on the cusp of doing something I felt like that I had never done before.
From the perspective of my site, from the perspective of allfantasysports.com, you know, I had already been looking into branching out. It was never my intention to just have this be AAF. If nothing else, I was planning on supporting some of these other summer leagues just to get the platform better for AAF season two. So I was kind of already in that mindset of expanding the site to other leagues and other sports. So it's still, you know, kind of business as usual from the site's perspective. I don't know. I knew I would be into the AAF. I knew I would be into spring football. I've wanted spring football to come back ever since I saw the USFL 30 for 30. I just didn't realize how much fun it would be. And that's the positive. I mean, I still think back to the positive memories I had. And, you know, there's something magical about that when it's a smaller league like that and everyone's really into the league. It's totally different from going to an NFL game. When you go to an NFL game, you just feel so kind of insignificant. You're there with the people next to you. With this, it felt like a whole community that you were a part of, and it was an amazing experience.
Oh yeah, I forgot to even mention, like one of the guys, Anders, we actually got him press credentials through, again, this kind of like, let's pretend this is a more serious endeavor than it is. And yes, so he had press credentials for the fleet, so he went to several games, you know, got free tickets and got to sit up in the media booth, and you know, I was really happy to be able to have him do that, because I think it was a cool experience and something that definitely, if the league would have gotten bigger and become more commercialized and become a part of the NFL, like obviously that's all going to go out the window, and you know, they're not interested in giving two random people you know, press credentials at that point.
The story isn't finished yet, however. In the spring of 2020, Vince McMahon will once again bring the XFL back to the arena of spring football. And regardless of what opinions or preconceived notions exist over its viability, it will once again provide a myriad of second chances and opportunities both on and off the field. And that, in the end, is what ventures like the AAF leave as an endearing legacy, a haven of opportunity for those that want to be a part of something bigger. I can't end this podumentary without saying thank you to Dean Jackson, Brian Wentzloff, and Matt Swanson for contributing to this project. Currently on altfantasysports.com, Brian has created fantasy platforms for WNBA, arena football, and soon will be hosting Big Three basketball. Matt Swanson will be following the upcoming season of the Canadian Football League at slotbacklabs.com. And even though the AAF shut its doors, noextrapoints.com still remains for those that want to review box scores and other statistics for the shortened 2019 season. I'm also grateful to Matt for letting me use the title No Extra Points for this project. This has been No Extra Points. My name is William Rankin, and you can follow me at WilliamRankin83 on Twitter.